Vi ste uz SBS na srpskom. Pronađite još interesantnih priloga na sbs.com.au/srbijan.
In the studio today we have Dr. Marina Pajić, recently awarded by the Australian Academy of Science the Ruth Stevens Garney Medal for major contributions to understanding and treatment of pancreatic cancers. First of all, welcome to SBS Radio and thank you for coming into the studio.
Thanks very much. Pleasure to be here.
You're working on specifically something that's known as tailored treatments. From what I understand and from what I suppose science understands at the moment, pancreatic cancers are particularly troublesome when it comes to survival rates. They have a very low survival rate.
Yeah, that's correct. So actually that's some of the discoveries that we have made that you've mentioned. So we've shown, for example, that pancreatic cancer is not just one disease. It's molecularly, genetically very varied. So each patient essentially that presents with pancreatic cancer has a different tumor from another patient. And not only that, that's what complicates it even further is that the metastases, so this is when the cancer spreads to other organs, those metastases can be very different from the primary tumor that, you know, developed in the pancreas. And so it's very difficult to treat. And currently what's being given in the clinic is the, you know, one treatment combination approach for all patients. And that's perhaps why, at least in part, it's not as effective as it could be. Pancreatic cancer is, it's actually improved in terms of the overall survival rates, but we still have a very long way to go. So just over 5 to 6 years ago, it was about sitting at about 6% survival rate at 5 years post-diagnosis. And we've just had the new numbers come out and it's 10%.
Yeah, 10%. At the moment. When you compare that to other types of cancer, how does it compare? Is it still a lot lower than, say, breast cancer survival rates or leukemia or skin cancers?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, for example, breast cancer has in particular seen major advances in how we treat the disease, and then that has now translated into really much improved outcomes. So, for example, breast cancer is much more common than pancreatic cancer. In Australia, it will be about 3,000 odd patients who will die from breast cancer. Pancreatic cancer, much rarer cancer. However, because the mortality is so high, again, very similar numbers, so same numbers as breast cancer will die of pancreatic cancer. Mm. So although it's much rarer, so less frequent, the mortality is so high that it's killing the same number of patients.
Yeah, which is quite concerning.
Yeah.
When you just mentioned that, you know, roughly 6 years ago, the mortality rate was that sitting at 6%. Why has it taken so long for pancreatic cancer to sort of come into the picture? Was it because it wasn't as known, or is it really possible that science has really only made these huge leaps in the last 10, 20 or so years?
No, that's true in the field of pancreatic cancer. I mean, we, I guess, struggle in the field in a few different ways. So firstly, there's not a lot of funding for pancreatic cancer because historically, funding has been focused on more frequent cancers. So things like breast cancer, prostate cancer, they're much more supported in that sense. So the researchers are much more supported. There's much more research going on into those diseases. And so this is why also now we're seeing survival rates of over 90% for both cancer types, whereas pancreatic cancer is literally the opposite, right? So not much money. It's diagnosed very late as well. So not many people, until kind of very recent, not many people actually were even aware of the symptoms of pancreatic cancer. So it presents quite late. The symptoms can be quite, I guess, diverse in the sense because it involves pain in the upper back, starts like that, jaundice, things that can be attributed to rapid weight loss, things that can be attributed to other health conditions. Mm. But now, so particularly with organizations like, you know, the Avner Pancreatic Cancer Foundation, Purple Our World, they're really, in Australia specifically, but also there are big organizations now internationally as well. They're getting the news out, you know, the need to diagnose early, the need to start to understand the symptoms when you present to the GP to ask for tests. Yeah.
Yeah. And researchers obviously have been dedicated for a while, but you touched on that topic of funding and sort of the differences in funding between some cancers and, for example, breast cancer and pancreatic cancer. Mm. Breast cancer that has been sort of a global issue and advocated for a much longer time. People might think that cancer and cancer funding and cancer research has been happening for so long. There must be so much money in it. There must be so much that has done. But how much money do you actually need to do even the most basic research? What does that process look like?
So it's really hard. I mean, it is really hard to get money. There's not much money allocated by the government for research specifically, let alone cancer research, focused cancer research money. That said, so we basically spend, I guess, more than 60% of our time applying for government grants every year. So essentially, instead of doing the research, we're highly focused on trying to get money, trying to get funding to run our research. And those things run in kind of 3-year to 5-year cycles. So again, even when you get a grant, you need to kind of think about how much, you know, how quickly can I get the results so that I can progress this study further to get another 3-year grant, you know, to get another 5-year grant. And that's also how you hire staff. So it's very hard to, you know, get a permanent thing going and to really, you know, to really try to make a real difference.
It's an expensive process.
Yeah.
Cancer research is, that's the bottom line, the equipment that's used, the amount of professionals that you need on board on a certain team requires money at the end of the day. That's the reality.
Yeah. So I run a team of 9 people, and that includes PhD students, honors students, and then 2 research assistants, for example, and a postdoctoral scientist to really try to drive the research forward. Yeah. And that is very expensive to run and maintain.
Yeah. Cancer is a big unknown in the world, and it is an overwhelming topic. Even when you just say cancer, it is impossible to really know what you're referring to, because even in the realm of pancreatic cancer, it's not always the same type of cancer. Mm. Within breast cancer, it's not always the same type. And then you have so many different types within the one umbrella term. Do you think that the public is informed enough as to how much of a problem cancer presents to modern society?
I don't know. I mean, I find it quite, I guess, interesting when people come up to me and ask me whether, you know, are we close to getting a cure for cancer? You know, I think that question in itself shows how much, maybe how little people know, because yeah, that's the whole thing, right? It is highly unlikely that we'll have one cure for every single cancer out there. And even for pancreatic cancer, right? What we are working on is really trying to kind of identify the right treatment combination for the right patient. So I think there is definitely optimism, at least in our field, that by making these kinds of smaller increments, right, finding the right therapy for the right patient, we will start to see increases in survival rates. But it's not going to just magically jump from, you know, 10% to 90% with one treatment approach.
What are the personal implications, emotional implications of a job like yours, where you know, in a lab are dealing with glass and you know, pipettes and whatnot, you know, applying for grants, looking at things through the lens of economy, looking at things through the lens of a team of workers, but then what you're producing out of that lab is a lot more than just a product. It's a lot more than just a cure. It's someone's whole life and family depends on what comes out of your lab. Do you ever sit down and sort of get overwhelmed by the responsibility that comes with a job like yours?
Oh, yes. But also, I guess, in a way that, because we work with patients quite closely, so we also work quite closely with survivors of pancreatic cancer. So yeah, it's emotionally really challenging, but at the same time, I mean, I really love it because those guys really put it into perspective, kind of what we need to focus on when we're doing our research. But it is tough. We also grow, you know, we established as part of our, in our laboratory, the preclinical models that we work with. I mean, these are patient tumors. So we've got 80 different patient tumors growing in our laboratory as cultures, you know, like cell cultures in 2-dimensional models, 3-dimensional models, and also in mice. And so then we try to, you know, screen those tumors, always in the back of my mind, in our minds, really knowing that, you know, that's someone's tumor, and that's potentially that needs to guide. We need to, based on what we find, we need to try to guide therapy
for those
patients.
Yeah, that's growing in someone and affecting their quality of life severely. Yeah. Is it easier to meet sometimes patients, or do you think that it's better to keep those two separated, or does that interaction motivate you to keep...
Oh, no, I
through.
Love it. I cry every time, though.
Yeah.
And that's why I decided not to become a medical doctor.
Yeah.
This is why lab is definitely for me. But I love it. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, even just last night I was watching that TV show with the ambulance operators and sort of thinking, I cried like four times in just the space of 15 minutes. And I was thinking, how do you keep it together and actually give someone, you know, advice on how to move forward? It's a tough situation. The last question that I have that's sort of related to cancer specific is, I mean, I know you just said, oh, when are we going to find a cure for cancer? But obviously the, you know, Australian Academy of Science is recognising that work in progress is being made in this field. So are you confident that work in progress is being made in the field? How much more do you think any field of science, because from what I gather, no cancer at this point has a cure. Which one do you think is first to maybe get there?
I hope it's us, because we do have a long way to go. So some of the things that we have in the pipeline, so this is what we're applying for funding right now, is actually to take our published, so these are the published papers basically that have gotten me to the medal stage, the discoveries that we've made. So now with a molecular screening trial that's going, so that's actually currently going on and funded, run by Professor David Thomas at the Kinghorn Cancer Centre at the Garvan Institute, so he's my boss.
Shout out to the boss.
So as part of his pan-cancer trial, we're looking at developing specific arms, so clinical trial arms, that will run new treatment options for pancreatic cancer patients, and that will involve essentially our discoveries. So from the preclinical, you know, the bench side. So that's really, that's where I'm kind of hoping that we're going to start to make a real difference.
Our audiences are hooked by just your first name and your last name, which always happens. You mentioned that you were from Niche, is that right?
Duh.
Yeah. recently, Niche, actually, we were talking to a organization that organizes a science forum, and the topic that they had this year was talking about girls and supporting women in science. And I'm sure that that's something that, you know, as a woman working in the field, you have seen. There have been countless reports, and not to get into the details of what the statistics are. The statistics definitely aren't the best, or maybe even representing what could potentially be. How have you found your experiences as a woman in STEM?
I think things are definitely changing. It's a little bit institution dependent, I guess. At least in our institution. So we have a long way to go. There are two females out of about nine, maybe. I might be wrong, like on the, but it's still, it's not a 50-50 percent, you know, representation, male, female, within our cancer faculty. But things are definitely improving. So what at least Garvan is doing in that sense is both training their senior leaders, so senior, both male and female, leaders to kind of look out for the potential differences in how females present themselves, because females in general tend to be a bit quieter, I guess. And so just to kind of try to get that out of the young female leaders coming out. And then at the same time, we've also got training for, so this is specifically for women. So that's called the Franklin Women Mentorship Program. So I was actually part of that program before I joined the Garvan faculty. And yeah, I found it really helpful to just kind of open my eyes to trying to figure out what different aspects are of leadership, what actually represents true leadership. So it builds you, I guess, as a female leader, future female leader. So there are things underway. I think things are looking better. I wish that we would get there faster.
Well, an interesting sort of, and very, you know, surface research on this, but, you know, I did a bit of digging on the internet, and statistics, when you compare women in STEM and women at maths and science-based universities in Serbia, and you compare it to Australia, the statistics actually maybe even slightly better in Serbia. You know, there are quite a few women that are sort of choosing naturally without any sort of institution backing to go for science-related degrees, to pursue careers in maths, in technology. Do you think that's reflected in Australian society as well?
I think it's a different system, though. I mean, if you do look at it, like just seeing my friends, for example, what they went through, even just the way maternity leave is set up in Serbia, you know, I think the positions are a bit more protected than here. Our institute is putting things in place to, you know, to try to make the whole process of coming back from maternity leave a lot easier. Like I had actually quite a lot of, I was a group leader at the time, so I led my group remotely while I was on maternity maternity leave. And then there was a lot of flexibility around, you know, once I actually physically came back into the office. But that's not everywhere. And also actually Garvan still can improve further, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you bring that up because that is a topic that most women in STEM, when I ask them what is the one thing in the industry that would push and help women to maintain the role that they're in or even excel further, they say that maternity leave is the number one because choosing between one or the other shouldn't have to be a reality. It should
It work. Is hard. Yeah, it is hard. So, for example, in our job as well, right, we travel. We are meant to travel a lot, international conferences, national conferences, and then that, you know, becomes part of your CV. And, you know, that when people judge you when you're trying to apply for grants, they always look at that. So for me, it's always been also quite hard, you know, do I leave my child at home and go on a conference? It's still actually hard. Yeah. And she's four.
Well, it's hard for any parent, let alone when you have the sort of stigma that may well be attached to it, even though your role, as we've discussed in the last how many minutes, is so crucial to society. Looking at that sort of, you touched on mentorship programs and whatnot, but again, this conversation is probably going to have a huge impact on a very specific group of you know, kids and young women in Australia, and that's, you know, Serbian girls that are going to possibly listen to this and say, wow, you know, Marina Pajic, and by the way, in the video, they pronounced your name very, very wrong.
Yeah, that Pajic,
is no good. they're going to hear Marina Pajic and they're going to say, hey, you know, that her name sounds like my name. She sounds like someone that I could be. How do you see yourself in that role? I mean, you said you have a young kid as well. What do you think you need to do to help the next generation get on board?
Tough
big questions.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't know. I mean, I just look at how, like, I try to imprint, like, for example, Mila. So Mila's my daughter. So she already wants to be a scientist. So her dad is a scientist as well. So I guess
she's got no choice.
Yes.
Well, be fair, my dad engineer, my mom's a scientist, and I turned out a disappointment.
No. But she's like, the only thing I try to kind of imprint on her is that, you know, everything is doable. You can be whatever you want to be. And then I think especially with the younger generations, I think the progression, you know, to senior leadership, senior levels, it's just going to become easier. It's just more about retraining the current leadership level to, you know, watch out for certain things and to just try to allow equal representation at all levels. Yeah. Because I think some of those things are actually subconscious. These people are not doing things on purpose. But some of the stuff we've learned as part of these mentorship programs, you know, is that people naturally, I guess, look at, you know, who's like me, right? When they're promoting people, you know, is this person like me? When actually they should be, I guess, looking for diversity in teams, right? Because everybody brings in something new and interesting, a different point of view, which is what you need for effective teams.
Especially in the field of research, where it would do no good if everyone had the same opinion or same...
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, way of approaching a problem.
Yeah.
What's next? What's the next step, you know, this year and the future plans for your team and your research?
Hopefully, hopefully bigger plans, bigger program type funding for our group so that we can really expand the repertoire of the types of therapeutic screening that we've got, and then actually moving that into clinical trials and then hopefully clinical practice. That's the goal really of my lab, because I sit at that, you know, that kind of, I guess we call it the translational, you know, bedside level, right, of research. So it would be nice to actually see some things in clinical practice.
Yeah, push it out of the lab and into use, really.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Marina, for joining us today. It's been a wonderful chat. I'm sure audiences will be very excited to hear what is happening, not just in the world of treating pancreatic cancer, but also, you know, thank you for sharing your personal story with us.
Thanks very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Želite da čujete još priča poput ove? Slušajte nas na Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify ili odakle god slušate podcast.